I can learn how to tread water well enough to, like, stay at the surface and, like, plan my next move.
Like, yeah, we should only work with nice people.
Lowest common denominator.
Human cultists? The Alliance of the Three?
No, I think he's just, like, a manipulating scoundrel.
Check, check, you know, Omaha.
I've got MVP immunity. Deal with it.
Like, if you've spent the last 10 years being really invested in Disney Star Wars, you can't admit what this is.
I found myself rewinding multiple times.
Mon Mothma. Terrible wife.
I just want to beat the Packers solidly one time before the, oh, Rodgers is, you know, he's so old, he's washed up. As long as he's still flexing around the field, talking about he owns us, you know, I got to get one of those error wins.
Thirty-six points is the result, 12 assists. At what point did you know you just had it and you had to keep going?
When I woke up.
Welcome to the show. It's Sunday. The Packers game just hit the second quarter. I'm gonna go ahead and watch the game for now. So let's start. I'm gonna start with about 40 minutes of Andor talk. We're gonna start with that. And spoilers for Star Wars, spoilers for Andor, though there's not a whole lot to spoil. But I would implore you not to fast forward, but fast forward if you feel like you have to, that's fine. But what I want to say is I feel like I have so many kind of backlog audio clips, backlog takes, stuff I want to say. Not sure I'm going to get to it by the end of Sunday night, so I'm probably just going to have a potpourri of random stupid thoughts at the end of this, and as well as answer your questions about the Bucks and the, you know, the terrible Bucks jerseys, the Bucks, the Packers, and whatever else we can fit in at the end of this. So hopefully you enjoy this. I think there's some good stuff here. I was also talking with my brother-in-law. If not, we'll catch you in another couple of weeks, hopefully, with basketball is beautiful, getting a little bit closer to be done. So, enjoy. And by the way, our TertullianWorld.com user of the week, Aaron at BucksHooligan, sent a very nice picture message, always getting compliments on this sticker, David Dunn 21, the Bucks and Six sticker. He's got it on his Apple laptop next to a Portis Underdog. I approve this message. A lot of people have been affected by Putin's price hike or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, man, our prices went up, but here's the thing. You're going to need a sticker, right? Like in these tough economic times, you're going to need a great big old sticker that says Bucks and Six. So go ahead and get that done. And we'd like to thank you, Aaron, for that free promotion. That website again, TertullianWorld.com. Back to the show. So my brother-in-law is here. Quite a get for me. And we want to talk about Andor. I think we'll have a big episode once it finishes in, I think, two more episodes. But Ryan, welcome to Tertullian World Presents. And maybe just to introduce you, why don't you give your Disney Star Wars rankings? So we did this a couple few ago. So you got Obi, you got two Mandalorians, you got Boba Fett, and you got Andor. How is it feeling like right now?
Okay, so right now I would say Mandalorian. And then Andor is a close second. And then the rest, it just doesn't really matter to me. Which isn't really fair, but to be honest, it's just kind of just content, you know? So when it comes down to it, like, I feel like there are certain seasons of certain shows, and just those shows in particular, that get, like, the actual look and, like, careful attention. And then the rest are just, like, kind of filler. And I feel like that's kind of like the business model now, right? You just got like a bunch of content you're putting out for people, but there's only certain ones that you give like the actual high quality, you know, talent to and budget and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like that's Mandalorian and Andor. So that's why I don't have much of an opinion on the others.
In my head, Mandalorian 1 and 2 were kind of, I don't differentiate really. I don't remember what changed. I guess I remember like the IG-88 getting shot in the sewer, and I remember how like that ended. But I don't remember why everyone thinks the first one is better necessarily, or any of that.
I feel like it was more just that nostalgia effect, you know?
Because it ends with Luke, though, right? I mean, that was kind of the thing. It ends with Luke
at yeah.
the very end, fighting the Iron Men, basically.
Yeah, right. Which was by far like the, you know, peak moment of the season or a series so far. But yeah, I felt like the first season was more cohesive just in the concept, you know, just like getting to know who the Mandalorian was and that like kind of Western, you know, feel. Whereas the second season was just kind of like the, you know, story of the week one, I feel, where it was just going through those different places, getting them to that last point. But I could be wrong, because like you said, they both kind of blend together for me as well.
There are simply no Strangers with Candy character in Andor. Like doing the, hey, little baby Yoda, you're my, you know, what's her name? You know, whatever. Like there's, like, I think I threw Carl Weathers under the bus one of these episodes, but it's, you know, obviously I love Carl Weathers and Giancarlo Esposito and whoever else, but it's just
Mando.
Yeah, right. All that. It's such a, we got a stew going, Mando.
Yeah. Said that for three episodes straight.
Whoa, 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 Mando. So the most important question we can ask you, do you know how to swim?
Oh, man. So that was going to be one of the things I mentioned. Like, it was already, I'm already like emotionally just like raw because I finally have some Star Wars that I can care about again, you know? And then I'm like, that was completely unnecessary, you know? I can't swim. Like, oh, just that hit me way more than it should have. But no, I would not have jumped either. I would have been right back at myself.
It's there are things that you know are true, but I still kind of reject. And one thing is freestyling. Like, you're never going to actually, like, obviously people can freestyle, but
right.
There's a part of me that thinks it's just a great big conspiracy that people have rhymes memorized and we're supposed to actually believe your brain can go that fast. And obviously people drown all the time, but I just don't believe anyone can't swim. And you know, and we were talking about it. What do you think the percentage is of like people just dying? Like if you'd have jumped in, what percentage did he just learn to swim if he didn't panic? Just any individual. Like that. 20% of people have to just be able to learn how to swim on the fly, I think.
I would agree, but I feel like 120% of those people would panic. So, right. just override that little nature bonus there. No, it's and like I was thinking even after that, like you jump in, because I'm like thinking through it in my mind. I'm like, okay, I can learn how to tread water well enough to like, you know, stay at the surface and like plan my next move, you know, because I'm not completely unable to swim, not to the point to where I would just panic as soon as I fell in the water. But then I'm like looking at the coast.
It's like, yeah, nah,
zero chance of me making it that 20 miles or something.
When we went on the cruise just a couple of weeks ago, and now everybody has like those full face snorkel masks, and the buoyancy of that and my fat was enough that I could just dangle. And I'm like it was like holding me up plus the salt water. Right.
Right.
So
right.
I have to think, so they jump, these dudes jump in with clothes, which have to kind of make natural air pockets. I'm thinking too, I don't know. It's just weird to me. Like there was a viral video. Maybe I sent that to you a year ago. Well, like the dude was going over, it was like two dudes going over like a zip line, but like a, you know, like a 40 foot zip line just over some water. And they were like, it's wild. He did that over water and didn't know how to swim. And like, he'd like, drop before the edge and then just drop like a stone. And it's, I don't know. It's wild to me that people can't swim.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I feel like most of it is just the panic factor. But yeah. I mean, I just never was able to tread water easily. Like, for some reason, it's, I don't know, you can call it a technique thing, but yeah, I think some bodies are just not especially made for swimming.
Yeah, well, right, that too. But people were like, it's wild how the black characters get killed in the show, and it's like, well, at least the black guy wasn't like, I can't swim.
Throw us a bone there.
This is wild.
Blast her to the face.
Right, yeah. It's like, so one thing I did want to ask, have you experienced any of this and or backlash, or is this just sort of a made up online thing? Like, I have a theory as to why it may be, but I think people are saying the ratings aren't as good, but also I think, like, if you've spent the last 10 years being really invested in Disney Star Wars, you can't admit what this is.
You're right.
I don't know. I mean, it's weird to me. There's just a lot of people being like begging people. Like, I don't care if people watch it or not. Like, they got a second. There's going to be two seasons. They're filming the second season. People can now watch it. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I feel like this is, and it's funny, right? Because, and I don't want to sound like pretentious here, but it's lowest common denominator, you know, quality content that they've been pushing out so far. Mm-hmm. And that's totally fine, right? For the masses, you know, the family, whatever, you want to go see a movie, you know, you go see a Rogue, or not Rogue One, that's what I was trying to remember earlier and couldn't, and now I just spit it out. The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Or, you know, one of those, Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker, either one of them.
Yeah. Especially as the, you know, more throwaway. But yeah, you just go see that, and guys like us have to just deal with it, right? Like, that didn't make sense in canon at all. Oh, shut up, you know, like, you're that guy, you right. know. Right. So now, and I have heard some reviews about this. It's like, oh, it's so slow. And it's like, no, this is Star Wars. Like, it's telling a story of this universe. Like, this is the stuff that matters. Right.
It's so interesting. It's like reading the books where, like, I think for a while, what we had to hold on to was like, yeah, the books are so deep, though. There's so much going on. There's such an infrastructure of all these worlds and all this politics and all this stuff. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely more adult taste, but I just can't believe how good it is. Like, it could have been as good as like 24 or something.
Right.
And it's like as good as The Wire, and it's incredible that it is.
You're right. And adult taste, right? It's adult taste in the sense that, you know, you have to be cognizant of the fact that this is a living universe in the story that he created. There's way more going on than just 3-4 sensitive people chasing each other around 3 planets. Like, you know, if that's adult focus, then sure, you know, like, I find the other stuff just be really basic, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would even take exception to that. Like, but yeah, it is a more mature story, I suppose, you know, like, a child isn't going to be interested in the Prison Break and what it means for, you know, the development of the rebels.
So I got one mad hot take for you, but do you have any hot takes or any special takes from just, so we obviously we saw the last episode, but just the series as a whole or anything that stands out or.
I wouldn't say hot take, just more of an interesting take. I feel Cassian Andor is, you know, probably just not a good guy. He's, like, I feel like he was on the fence before, you know, like, anti-hero, you know, doing what he had to do. It's like, no, I think he's just like a manipulating scoundrel, you know, like, Andy Serkis was just living his life, serving out his term, you know, and this guy comes in, just throws the place over in like 7 days. Not even the phase for it, you know, just gets everybody hyped up. He's standing behind the mic like, no, you gotta hype him up. You gotta right. do it. Give him a speech that'll lead him. Like, right. He's just that troublemaker behind the scenes, you know?
It is kind of interesting because we were saying some of that it's interesting that he does that in Rogue One. It's also Jen that makes the big speech, just him being this like almost other side of Palpatine, just hyping other people up to do the thing. Yes. It's like, no, more and more. It's like, it's not hitting, son. Run it back. Run it back. Turn up my speakers, you know?
It's like, he's the footnote in the historical text that's just like, oh, this was the guy who pulled the trigger, actually. Like, right. The figurehead actually didn't really do anything.
low-key, one of the really good writing moments in one of the lesser Craig Bonds is the intentionally dopey, like, white guy CIA character, and Bond is like, he's like, bro, you're burning our asset or something. He's like, yeah, we should only work with nice people.
You know, he's yeah, like, right.
That'd be way better if we only work with nice people. And they're like, yeah, we're burning our asset. Live with it, right? Okay, so here's my hottest take. Mon Mothma, terrible wife. So they have this arranged marriage, right? And I very much enjoyed the lazy, disinterested, foppish, you know, hedonistic portrayal of her husband and her kind of, I guess, materialistic daughter or whatever thing. But hear me out, right? When you get married, or if you ever get married, there are sacrifices that have to get made, and you have to, like, find your other things that are your hobbies that round out your life. Of course, your life is fulfilling with your marriage and your work and everything else, but you need to have, you know, a podcast or a dope t-shirt shop or, like, you know, make YouTube videos. But you have to do something else, right? So Mon Mothma's other thing is the rebellion. She's not including her husband. Her husband and daughter are just like, she sucks. She's fake. She's phony. Everything else, right? Right? He's like, he's literally in every scene, like, wondering what's up with her, right? And she's like, no, I'm fulfilled by overthrowing the government, right? In my spare time with my boyfriend from high school. And the husband is like, don't you just want to go gambling or whatever, right? So it's like I feel just like, I feel like if Luthen could give her some pointers or whatever, it would at least be like, you need to do a better job keeping up appearances with all of this. But she's just like, she's not like playing the double role. She's not like Luthen where she's like putting on the foppish face and like, oh, I've got some artwork for you and some sculptures. She's like, cannot hide her contempt for her family, and it's hurtful. That's what I'm saying.
No, that's a good take. That's a good take for sure. And, you know, just thinking, I had another thought about that, just looking at the in-universe future and our past. She was always portrayed as just like the leader of the rebels, you know, like, I feel that was my take on it, you know, like, she was kind of that figurehead that was the wise and older, you know, governmental bureaucratic leader or whatever, you know, the voice of reason and knowledge and wisdom, blah, blah, blah. Like, looking back, I'm just like, she was terrible, like, at all of this. Like, didn't know where to get the money, was going to, like, not team up with them to not get the money because she didn't like the, you know, morality behind it, which is overthrowing. I mean, you're, what are we talking about, you know? Which is why I love the end of that episode so much. When he just gave that like little monologue about what he had sacrificed, you know?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
It's like, there's no disillusionment behind me being a good guy. Like, the history books are going to say, if I fail, I was a bad guy. She just completely does not get that. And yeah, at the same time, she's completely sacrificing her family for it. Like,
right. So it's like, you want to sacrifice them now in your mind, or you want to sacrifice them in 6 months when we ask you to, but that's kind of what it is. And he says this, and he makes this long speech on a catwalk looking like Dooku or somebody with this cape. It's just, and I'm just watching this, like, every 5 seconds we're watching this with, you know, my wife and the kids as they scroll their phone, you know, phones or whatever. And I'm like, this is so great. This is so, I can't believe how great, I cannot believe how great this is. It also kind of seems, at least to me, like, so here's what, if I had to predict the next episode, here's what I think, because this is what, and this is kind of a metaphor that I think that holds to real life too, is, so you got to give up your kids to marriage at some point. And so, like, you're older and wiser, but, like, you hope she's into it. I actually think the daughter will be into it. I think she'll have to arrange this thing. And because she's older, I think she's not going to want to do it. But even, like, whatever we're to think the guy who came is, like, even he's no dirtier than anyone else in the entirety of this show. That's what makes it, like, so great. Like, he's not exactly dripping with evil or anything. He's just like, hey, this is a status come up for me. This isn't like money. He's like, money doesn't really interest me anymore. This is, which is how, like, the history of every society and all these things work. He's like, no, how about a alliance, a marital alliance? you know, and it's just so subtle and it's so great, but like,
yeah, it's a meaty show. Quality cut.
Yeah. So what else you got? I've run out of stuff to say about it, man, to be honest. Like, it doesn't really matter how it ends. I think probably the old lady will die. But
yeah, I'm curious. I don't know. I wouldn't say curious, but I guess curious about how it ends on the Empire side. They've introduced some pretty interesting characters, and I feel like they haven't really done much with them so far, you know? So I'm just kind of wondering where they're going with those, what the crescendo of their arc will be. Because I don't feel like we've reached it yet, like the main blonde officer who's kind of just like heading things up at this point.
Oh, her, not fake Paris Hilton, the other one.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, okay, right. Auntie, whoever she ended up being. But so I guess the guy, by screenshots, or maybe I just missed it watching it, so the guy following around Senta is the guy who was shown for the ISB or CIA, whatever the acronym is for basically their CIA, is like the guy who was walking around in the background. So what we learned in this last episode is that Senta is walking around looking for intel on Bix to take out Andor, and she's being followed by the CIA. And then also that the guy who we hadn't really ever seen undermine anything, but not the one who's sent to, who's the blonde agent's right hand, but the other one is tied into Luthen and is Luthen's mole, basically. So that's kind of what came out of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I love that it takes that level of thought and like storyboarding in your mind to even like piece it together. It's so funny. Another thing I noticed just watching this, like I found myself rewinding multiple times because I'm like looking at my phone and trying to read stuff on my phone at the same time, because I've just become so accustomed in the past like 5 years or so to whatever I'm watching being so disposable that I'm doing three other things while I watch it. And I'm like, wait, no. I completely missed an entire like part of the show. Like, what's going on? I have to go back and watch it. Like, nothing's commanded my attention like this in a long, long time.
Yeah, we've been watching it with the captions on, but then it's like I try not to look at the captions because I don't want to read ahead and kind of miss stuff. But it's just right. It's mad subtle.
Yeah.
I and even on the girl power angle, like, my least favorite character, I would say, through the arc is Senta, just because there's something not grimy enough and not believable about her. She basically still looks like she could be wearing like a Bollywood dress or something like that walking in the streets. I feel like, because they're all like, she's the grimiest one, she's the smartest one, she's the toughest one, she's blah, blah, blah. She's like got no time for anything else, but I feel like she sticks out walking around for whatever reason. But that's like the smallest of, like, I thought I would have told, like, if you'd have told me that this show would have ascended from the heights of that dude in the secondary arc selling him out and basically being like we're gonna like let's go, let's run, and like right. Everything that happens with that, like, hey, I made up that story, and the little guy basically being crushed by the gears of capitalism as he like gets crushed by like $1,000, you know, 100,000 credits or whatever it was, like I was sure that, and that was going to be the crescendo of the show with the Northern Lights and all that. And just every week is just better. It's like, it's really tripped out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, I think I sent it to you over group text or whatever, you know, but when a creator mentioned, wasn't really a Star Wars guy, you know, or just wasn't like super into it or something, but like knew how to tell a good story. And that was what mattered. I mean, it showed that like week after week consistently. The Star Wars part was always just dressing, you know. And it's funny because Lucas gets a bunch of crap for, you know, not even writing a good story or whatever, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. Clearly he got something with the whole bureaucratic angle of it, because that's a crucial part of making this,
yep,
any Star Wars property, I feel, stand the test of time.
Any show that depicts bureaucracy is more relatable to the viewer that has to deal with that at their job, right? So any version of like the gears of any kind of company or whatever else, whether it's military or whatever you're watching, like that just becomes relatable to adults. Like it's not relatable to kids, but that kind of stuff, all the walk and talk stuff kind of plays. Like,
yeah.
And to some degree, the serial killer, Jay thought he's a serial killer guy. Dudley Do-Right wasn't in this episode. And so yeah. I wasn't really sure where that was going.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I was completely lost by that. I thought he was going to be a far more important part of the story, or at least have way more screen time. Yeah, seems like he's kind of fizzled out, I feel.
I feel like early on, I thought it was kind of, well, this is how all these different people kind of come to rebel, and I thought they were doing that.
Right.
And now it seems to be this is how someone sort of gets radicalized. Because I think it's not a patented Lucas idea, but it ran through all the, I guess, media kind of associated with Star Wars is that, well, it's like order versus chaos. And so some people are going to really desire order and want just more and more order. And some of the people are always going to be with it for that reason. And then like, well, what makes somebody be such a stooge? Well, this and this and this and this, or because he's at his essence an achiever, you know. And but I think we're now, it does seem like they're basically depicting an incel, but for a while it was like I wasn't really sure where this was going, and certainly I was not prepared for him to be stalking old girl outside her job. But
I think you hit that on the head. Definitely seems like they're going more that route, and you know, without getting overly political, yeah, I feel like it's kind of reminiscent to what's going on currently. You know, you kind of see, okay, well, you know, some people are more conservative and, you know, they want to rule in a certain way, and, you know, that level of bureaucracy going on. And then there's always that other person who that's just not good enough for. And it's like, yeah, we all know we could do this, but there are certain rules to engagement, you know. And when you're in a system that's basically operating to like soft oppress the people, you're always going to have those that pop up and want to take it to the next step because they think that that's, you know, them getting their job done well. And that's, I feel like where that officer comes in, I forget her name, but if they've even said it, but yeah, she wants to take it to the next level and she wants to catch Cassian and all this other stuff. And, you know, the other Dudley Do-Right, like you said, comes in and he's like, oh, I could have got him, you know, I could have had him long ago, but, you know, these other people are just too weak, you know, or like, you know, just got that kind of vibe to him. And it just kind of, I feel like that's what drives the Empire in the future into being like the more fascist state that we see in the original series of Star Wars. And it's funny because it's like, I'm like looking at this and I forget who I was talking to. It might've been with you, but it's like this empire looks fairly progressive, you know, like it's,
yeah,
we got black guys, you know, we got some women, you know, high ranking officers and stuff. And then you like, look at the original trilogy and it's like, it was just white guys, just like
white guys and mutton chops.
Right. Just around the table and Vader, you know? And yeah, I feel like that just kind of, I feel like you hit the nail on the head where it's going, just kind of going to go that more fascist route and show what turns the Empire into something that was already past the people's, you know, breaking point of what they wanted in a government into being like, you know, interstellar, like just legit space Nazis, as people like to say.
Yep. And yes, and but I think it depicts also kind of, because the idea of order is that order is the only thing that order and fear and chaos. And obviously some of this is in the text of some of these movies, but I mean, just in life, like the whole idea is like, what's up, boys? What's a oh boy with the lazy eyes name?
Somebody's been feeding you a lot of Dasha.
Right.
Ghost dog.
Forrest Whitaker meets with Luthen. And that's kind of the idea. He's like, he's like, I'm not, you know, human cultists, you know, the Alliance of the Three, whatever. He's like, I'd kill all of these other rebels if I saw them. I hate all of them. And that's like the point. It's like, no one's going to get along, right? Whatever right. The names were, right? He's like, the Falcon Clan? he's like, I'm the only one. He's like, I think he says, like, I'm the only one with clarity of purpose. It's like, it's me and everyone else can die, right? and he's like, yeah, but you're sleeping in cold caves. And he's like, what does that matter, right? He's like,
exactly.
And I thought that was just kind of a beautiful scene. It's just like, everybody's not on the same page. Like, I think a lot of shows depict whatever the group dynamics, a lot of people aren't on the same page because they're all so craven and climbing over each other. And you get some of that. And certainly you get a lot of that in the Empire. But you don't see a lot of, we have ideological differences, so I'm not going to, you know, you can't share my airbase or whatever they were doing in that scene. And the thing that I really think, so it's like, we weren't really alive when Empire Strikes Back came out. We just grew up with it, right? But I really think, like, all those scenes are great. But Vader choking out people from a distance and Vader killing these high-ranking admirals and all that has to be viewed now as a one-off, as Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader is at the end of his leash. This is coming to the end of his story. He wants this power. He probably suspects this Luke, or he senses something is wrong. He's got this tenuous relationship with the Emperor, blah, blah, blah. Instead, it's just become a canonical thing that everybody's walking around with Sith powers doing this kind of stuff. And they show it in, you know, Force Awakens and all this other kind of stuff. And that doesn't really make sense in the universe. It makes sense if it's this crazy thing that one guy is doing, because I assume nobody actually knows that the Emperor has powers like that. But, you know, through video games and Inquisitors and all this kind of stuff and the Force Unleashed and all this, like, I don't think there's really magic in the universe like that. And that's why the bureaucracy is scary. Like, the slow dehumanizing creep of all of this is scary. Like, what people are willing to do just by pressing a button, all that kind of stuff is scary. But instead they made it into, like, people throwing temper tantrums with the Force. And I just don't think it plays to kind of the way I look at it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's an amazing point, actually. And I think you're spot on. And that was always my interpretation looking at the, you know, original trilogy, is that, you know, Palpatine wore the hood so that people wouldn't realize he was, you know, Sidious. Right. And yeah, that people weren't aware that even still that he was the Sith Lord, because obviously that's pretty easy to tie together and be like, well, I'm not sure. Even if it's just for fear purposes, you know, like, if you exhibit that kind of power, somebody's going to come for you. So yeah, I 100% agree. You're not going to just have, you know, this branch of, you know, dark force wielders who can go around to whatever planet and just take somebody's head off because they, you know, don't like them. That's not the way even an Earth-wide government or country-wide government would run functionally, let alone an interstellar one.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, no, I think that's a great point.
So, we'd like to thank you for coming on. It's been a half hour. I'm going to clear out, though. You want to talk about Justin Fields.
And then you cut me off in the call. Right. Then do it somewhere else. Bye, folks. That's all we got for you today. I don't know. I'm just enjoying the hype train. It's been two games of, like, you know, decent output. But I do think he's a great athlete. Let's see you make your jokes about, oh, he should have just ran it in. Oh, he should have just ran it in. And he learned how to run, I guess.
Rodgers is missing passes to offensive linemen, fat and alone in the end zone, and all of a sudden there's like highlights of Bears quarterbacks running. There hasn't been this much sauce to the rivalry since Sexy Rexy looked like Arv every other game in 07 or whenever that was. He looked like Romo. He looked like the medium version of Romo, like, a lot.
That's a good call, yeah.
and then it just went away, right?
For a while. Yes, it was never reliable, like all things about the Bears.
But it's like, you guys are just so thirsty for a quarterback that it was just like, I've never, I mean, literally, you'd be like, I've never seen a Bears quarterback elude a tackler in the pocket like that, right? Like,
no, it's true.
Like Grossman had that sauce in the pocket, or he was like backfooting and sidestepping, and it was a lot like Romo. But yeah, I'm
gonna have such to a different time. Like, that was like the early birth of the, you know, running quarterback time, I feel, you know. Like, that was the extent of everybody's moves back then.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I mentioned I'm going to Milwaukee in a few weeks. Might have to buy a Fields jersey, test my luck. Go walk around the city, you know, see what anybody has to say.
It was, I haven't thought about this in a minute. Oh, I'm sure they'd be fine with it, right? It's
yeah, of course.
That Bears Colts Super Bowl where I wasn't sure who to root for because I just hated everything that Peyton Manning stood for with his stupid check, you know, Omaha, and run here, fake like he's talking to Edgerrin James, walk around, do all this, point that. Like, I was just like, dude, you're whack, man. Like, what are you doing, you know? And it's like he finally, like, stumbles into a Super Bowl. And Devin Hester runs the opening kickback. And I'm like, I guess I want the Bears to beat him. I was like, you know what? I guess I want the Bears to beat him, you know?
Exactly.
And it's like, even that, they like kind of stumble. It wasn't like they blew out the Bears, but they kind of stumbled into winning solidly or whatever. But yeah, it'll be interesting if he's like, because who's the Eagles quarterback now?
That hurts.
Yeah, if he's as good as Hurts, you're set up. Because I think Hurts similarly is like, obviously you're always just projecting, but people think he's kind of in that Russell Wilson, like the good version of Russell Wilson class, where like maybe not all the great tools, but maybe he's just doing everything well. But I haven't watched a single. I've been watching less football, to be honest, but it'll be interesting. It'll be crazy next year if it's like Love and Fields and it's like an actual rivalry and actual, like, I'd have no idea what's going to happen all these games.
Yeah, yeah. As for Hurts, I just from what I've seen, that man makes little to no mistakes. So it's a high bar, but I got high hopes for Fields. See what this next Green Bay Bears matchup looks like. I just want to beat the Packers solidly one time before the, oh, Rodgers is, you know, he's so old, he's washed up, excuses come in. As long as he's still flexing around the field, talking about he owns us, you know, I got to get one of those error wins.
It's such a tragedy for my narratives that he ever wants to go with the Packers, because, like, the talent was always apparent, but it was always so crystal clear to me. I think some people, look, I'm got other terrible qualities, I'm sure, but like I can read people, and people were like, Aaron Rodgers, what a great guy. And I'm like, oh, this guy who's like doing the championship belt after he hasn't won a thing yet. And like I like a cocky player as much as the next guy, but it was so clear. Like, he got like the hero edit for so long. And it was like, oh, I think he's, I think he's this guy that everybody, it took, you know, and then, but the national media only figured out like 5 years ago. I mean, it was like, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. He wasn't, the perception of him, it's not that he's aged, like everybody changes the age, but like the perception of him was completely different. And it was like, no, it's pretty clear half of his teammates don't like him. And it's pretty clear that he's like a different kind of guy if things aren't going well. But here we are, right?
Yeah. How old is he? 36?
It might be older 36. Than that.
Aaron Rodgers is 38 years, 9 months, and 17 days.
Something as like a 37-year-old man, myself, that is around that age where you start, you know, settling into your, I don't really care who I piss off. So, like, because looking back, I'm like, I do feel like Rodgers was two different people. So, yeah, I think before he was just that guy where he was, you know, trying to be humble, you know, to an extent, at least with the people in the clubhouse, you know, in the locker room. But then he got the, you know, a few MVPs in the ring, and now it's just like, all right, look, this is who I am. I don't care. I'm not taking your vaccine. It's a hoax.
I'm gonna get the wackest tattoos now and just lean into it.
I'm getting MVP immunity. Deal with it. So yeah, no, it's funny. I feel like he legit was a different guy, and that's why he was getting the hero edit, if you will.
But there's a world for him, and there was a world for Favre. If Favre retires after 2007, and he had a lot of really great football left, that part gets locked in, right? And I think whichever State Farm commercial where he's like playing the guitar was like probably was filmed 3 months before everybody realized that he was sort of that guy. And I had been saying it since like 2006, but it was like all of a sudden they're making commercials where like he could have been the Jeopardy guy. Not that I don't know why. I still don't know why that's a valuable thing. I still don't know why that has any prestige. It's on during the daytime. I don't know why that he thought that was like hosting the Oscars or something like that. But like obviously the idea was that his Q rating was high enough that he could have done that, he thought. And it's like if he went away at that point, people would have seen him as completely differently than this guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting.
And the haircut isn't helping, but it's like
we need to find out exactly when he took that ayahuasca. I'm gonna get to the root of this. I told you in text. People say it like dissolves ego. I don't know if that's a good thing for everybody, you know? Because he apparently stopped caring about what people thought completely.
Well, I think too. I mean, and you said about work. I do think this is something that we always knew as kids, but as we get older, I can just be honest that I try to do a good enough job at my place of employment. I try to even do a pretty good job. If they bring in a manager who's a psycho, that will get better work out of me for a time, right? Like that's what coaching is. It will, but then again, it's the Sith. It's everything else. It'll work until it doesn't work, right? You grip too hard, you're going to mess it up. But like that's the thing, right? And if you bring in a player coach, I am going to take advantage of him in short order, but it'll be great. And I will be happier for a while. Like that sports is exactly like your job that way. Right. Right. True. Like if they yell at Giannis for missing the free throws, there may be some dividends paid to it, but ultimately like it's not a great idea, you know? And I don't know. To me, it's sports is more interesting to discuss in the context of like your job. Because it's like, I know I'm giving B- effort at this point.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm looking at an unanswered IM right now while I'm on this this call.
Well, hey man, I'll let you go then. This was fun. If you want, and we have the big powwow at the end of Andor or whenever we do that, let me know. I'm sorry we couldn't bring my wife, your sister, on to complete this, but I think she's mad at me right now or doesn't want to do that, so that's fine.
Yeah, we'll wait her out. She'll come around.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'll join again whenever.
It's fascinating to watch all these people try to, you know, not appropriate, but try to adopt the politics of the show for their particular politics. Because we're not trying to be contemporary in any sense. Anything that is contemporary is just the fact that people aren't looking at history. I mean, slavery, colonialism, imperialism, oppression, frustration, political. I mean, these are 3,000-year-old issues. You just go back through every single piece of history and you can just drop the needle anywhere you want. And that's what we're kind of doing. That's the beauty of doing a show like this, is you can just cherry pick everything from, you know, in recorded history, of political history. It's all there. So it's interesting to watch people try to pin us down contemporarily. But no, I don't think I haven't changed anything really specifically that we're doing, other than just trying to keep our standards up and not get lazy.
So Tony, thank you again for this time. We have to let you go, but I know that two episodes left in this season. You're about to go to London. You got 12 more. I think I know your answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Anything you'd like to tell us and the listeners about the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, what are they making in the jail?
anything you'd like to prepare
us
for?
The writer's room. The jail is the writer's room. They're building the second season in the writer's room.
That's right.
That's what they're doing. That's right.
Bo Williman hasn't worn shoes in 3 years.
I'm trying not to get fried. I want to get flavor tonight. That's my goal.
Yeah.
I would only say this, that if people dug it along the way, I mean, we're in control of our story. You know, we're in control of it. And I saw some people say, oh, it looks like the people aren't really, you know, it's chaotic. All these characters are going on. There will be convergence. We will round out. We have some place that we're going to. I think it'll be a satisfying place to finish and a pregnant moment to continue. That's the plan. So
with that being said, and taking into account the chemistry between Giannis and Middleton, mm-hmm. which is huge,
and Giannis' happiness.
I take into consideration
that any move the Bucks do, they're gonna have Giannis sign off.
Correct.
So let's take that.
Just like this one. Just like the Brooklyn
I just
Jones.
Don't feel like Giannis would sign off for that. I really don't.
It's a hypothetical.
I understand. But I'm telling you, I don't feel like he would sign off for it.
Oh, but man.
I mean, also, like, the Nets aren't gonna take Chris Middleton, Marjon Beauchamp, and a first round pick for Kevin Durant. So like
I would be,
again, it's hypothetical here.
Mm.
Tim's still thinking.
I mean, like the trade, I mean, is it much of a trade-off like that, though, with the way our team is structured and Middleton's role on our team? Well, Kevin Durant coming in here, in essence, still being number two. He will be number two now.
Mm-hmm.
This will probably be the first time that he actually isn't the number one. Mm-hmm. Like, bona fide, flat out, hey, you're not number one.
Mm-hmm.
And give him free. You giving Kevin Durant free reign?
Do you want Ken to answer while you're thinking?
I was gonna say, like, you're thinking out loud.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I feel like, well, I'm not like a legit jit.
That's
like,
why I'm very
Bucks
curious.
Fans or whatever.
I'm very curious. Enough
to,
know.
To me, it doesn't make sense to bring KD in. Like what Camille was saying. Like, I don't think Giannis. Of course, it's KD. So of course, like having a superstar of his caliber, like he'll walk in bucket. But again, like he don't play full seasons. Giannis won a championship without him. The team is still good enough to.
So did Golden State.
Huh?
I said, so did Golden State.
Yeah. So I don't feel like it'll be. I don't know. It don't make sense. Like, after everything that has happened between the Bucks and the Nets, like, it doesn't make sense for KD to come here. Like, it'll be good to see, like, on a nightly basis, like, oh, I'm going to go to Bucks game and I get to see KD every night. Like, that aspect of it sounds good, but in the long run, it doesn't make sense to me.
Aside from the fact that I don't think Giannis would sign off for it,
Well, you sound like you hating. I told you
were. Oh, so I think we're hate Chris Middleton.
No,
I already knew it.
I told you we're all hates Chris Middleton. So of
that's
course
why he sound like
he
hating.
He's gonna say get rid
that's
of him.
Poor right. man's Joe Johnson. Like, come on, bro.
No, that's a disrespect.
He would trade Chris Middleton for like Tobias Harris or something.
Yeah, like listen. One, I mentioned a lot of the same concerns last week when I was talking about why, if I was the Boston Celtics, I would not trade for Kevin Durant, and a lot of that sentiment is the same as to why if I were the Bucks, I would not trade for Kevin Durant. I know what I have, mm-hmm. and I know this is a championship level team. The locker room chemistry is great.
Mm-hmm.
The locker room, they have a for real. Like that's what they always say. Like Giannis and Chris are like they champion that locker room,
mm-hmm.
and now Drew as well. Where it's like that's just not how they get down.
Mm-hmm.
And one you and bringing that whole. Randomized chemistry aspect when you bring KD in there because KD can be kind of moody
yeah.
and do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that would align. And also when you're thinking about fit, because we have to give Chris Middleton, probably Marjon,
mm-hmm.
probably some other pieces as well. I don't know what the package would be.
Swag package.
But I just don't think that it's worth messing up the chemistry that you already have. And also KD is older.
Mm-hmm. With, that age gap is a lot smaller though. Like
it's,
Chris
no, it's,
is
it's smaller. No, like, but again, he is still younger than KD is, and
also a lot better.
For the role he. I mean, Kevin Durant's a generational talent, mm-hmm. but I'm saying like the role that he would play on this team, I'm not sure if you'd be utilizing the best of what you can do with KD with the ball running through Giannis's hands. Because I don't see KD and Giannis in pick and roll like I would Chris and Giannis.
They still put up about 25 shots.
No, I'm saying how they get the buckets are different. Like Middleton and Giannis have a beautiful pick and roll game. Like that's if you saw in the playoffs during the championship run when they didn't have to do, let's just keep spamming Giannis and Chris pick and roll because either Giannis is going to score or Chris is going to be able to get a bucket. And KD is not running pick and rolls the same way that Chris Middleton does. Like, KD would be on the other side. Like, you know what? Like, it's just, the steps are different. I don't like it. I wouldn't want it. Don't need it.
Could you talk yourself into it if it happened?
I would cry.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to lie to you. I would cry. I would be devastated if we traded Chris Middleton.
For anybody or for Kevin Durant?
Probably. Today, anybody. I don't want to trade Chris Middleton. I love Chris Middleton.
All right. Last player-centric question. This is from Harms. I'm interested in what you guys have, if you have an answer for this one. What player has the most pressure coming into this season not named Giannis?
Still Chris.
I think I was going to say it's pretty obviously Chris, right?
Well, here's my reasoning. All of after the Celtics series was, if the Bucks had Chris, they would have won. If the Bucks had Chris, they would have won.
He's turned into like a Christ-like figure very quickly.
How many people kept saying if the Bucks simply had Chris Middleton, they would have won that Celtics series, and who knows what would have happened? Like, there were so many people, myself included, that was saying, like, yeah, obviously if he was there, I would have had much more. Like, I had faith in the Bucks without him. I would have had more faith with him. So I think that's going to be the guy. And this is also going to be one where it's like, all right, we know what Giannis is, and Giannis is going to dominate, and it's going to be that simple. We know what Drew can be, and sometimes Drew is going to be absolute offensively, but his defense is still going to be good enough that, whatever, offensively every once in a while. But with Chris, it's like, okay, you don't have that. You can be best defensively anymore. Like, you got to come in. Like, your goal is now to get the buckets when the team cannot hit a shot. And if he struggles to do that, that's going to look, and again, he's got the big contract. So I think for him, it's always going to be that kind of, you need to show up in the playoffs. Like, we need to see what we saw in those. We need to see the clutch baskets. We got to see the tough shot express. We have to see that. That's going to fall on you. And that's going to be your responsibility. Cause now we know, okay, with Chris Middleton, the Bucks with healthy Giannis and Chris and Drew, the Bucks can win a title. With a healthy Giannis and Drew, the Bucks might win a title. Like, but now we got to see, like, Chris is probably like the one out of like Drew and Chris is like, we know what Drew can bring, and he can, if he can't bring on one end, he for sure can bring on the other. And while Chris, I think it's kind of not expected to bring it defensively, so if he's not bringing it offensively, then it makes things a lot tougher, because he's got to be the guy that's kind of got to be able to hit the shots when Milwaukee needs a shot the most. So I'll say Chris Middleton, because too many people are saying if they had him, the Bucks would have won that Celtics series. And now he's got to come in, and he's going to be not 100% going into the season because he's got that wrist surgery. I'm gonna say Chris.
Yeah, agreed across the board. Doesn't help that he had, for him, a down year overall. The Bulls series, the two games that he was in, or the couple of games he was in, he was not great either, so that didn't look great. And also the audacity of this guy and his agent to talk about a contract extension at whatever dollar value they're talking about. No, we're not talking about that until if you already got a player option for next season for $40 million. We don't need to worry about whatever your next contract is going to be. So I think for him,
I
most pressure for sure.
They're like, what do you mean next? Like, what do you mean contract extension? You just got one. I was like, oh, wait.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, what are we talking about? Another contract? Wasn't this for like the next 8 years?
You didn't get like 5 years? Like,
the Chris Middleton wars were so intense that it felt like, you know, a decade went past already. And then I was like, well, we got him for another decade. No, so I think for him, the pressure of, yes, expectations around everybody that he is going to be the one that will come in and help lift all boats that was not there against the Celtics, we're making him out to be this like godlike figure, but it was a pretty close series, so it's not unreasonable for people to be like, if Chris was there, we probably would have played slightly better. But for him, if he has expectations of getting a huge contract extension on top of everything else, he's got to be playing like the second coming of MJ, and we got to see it like right away. Wrist or no wrist, like we got to see it all season long. And that's not really Chris's thing, and I think for him, that's why the pressure's highest.
That, of course, highlights from the wonderful Tech File podcast and the Brew Hoop podcast. I feel like I don't shout them out as much as some other ones, so no shade intended by me using those. Those have been saved. So what I'm thinking, those have been saved for a while. Like, I have a bunch of stuff saved from when I was gone, and I keep working on this video and I keep putting it off and I keep doing more podcasts like a dummy, and I'm already got the next 5 podcasts, really, really dope stuff I got kind of planned and coming up. So I got stuff planned. So I just, obviously I disagree with what was said in the first podcast. No shade should be interpreted by that. I just been meaning to put that one out for a little bit because I think it kind of describes the emotional argument for Chris Middleton. So I'm going to go to the questions. It's already late. It's Sunday night. It's late. Packers win, Packers win, Packers win. Hey, how about that? 4 wins, right? So our first question here is from Steve Pellipel. This was a DM question in response. This looks like this is November 1st. And it's kind of a roundabout question about the Kyrie situation as it existed November 1st, which will give me an excuse. I don't think I'm going to play. I got like 10. I bet you I have 10 backed up audio clips. I'm not going to play all of them. I kind of wanted to play. Do I have that one about the Blue Wire? It was interesting. Like the Blue Wire guys jumped in the Locked On guys. And maybe I'll put that at the end. Maybe I didn't even download that one. But that was fascinating to me. But I took a cruise, 3 weeks ago now, something like that, and I'm still kind of backed up on takes. So let's see what Steve says here. Obviously the Kyrie and Kanye thing is taking all sorts. I made a tweet talking about the kind of faux morality of kind of these people and all the PR, whatever I said. And Steve wanted me to elaborate on that, and he said, my assumption is that you've shared before that athletes are messed up people just like us, and it's a fool's errand to place them atop pedestals that are too lofty and too glorious. And then he kind of asks about where basically enjoying the games goes versus being sanctimonious. So I'm going to now see if I can find this clip, which should not be interpreted in any political prism, but a lot of questions, and I won't reveal who some of the DMs for. And again, people are only complimentary publicly and in DMs. And if you'd like to criticize me publicly and in DMs, that's totally fine, because this is just a silly hobby. But I probably have, just because I figure no one cares and I don't really seem to get any pushback. People were like, why are you defending Sarver? Or just, people don't even say this. People just kind of lean at it. What about this? Aren't you against Kyrie? Why are you on Sarver? Isn't Favre terrible? What about Udoka? And I don't particularly, I guess I'm going to comment on some of this stuff sometimes when I can, but like, it's not the most interesting thing. So the Ethan Strauss podcast, I had an excerpt from that I had pinned in association with something else. But why this is interesting to me primarily is for the Twitter question. And maybe we can weave this in. You know what? Let's do that right now on the fly. We can make this a part of the Elon Twitter conversation, because I think, you know, you got your politics or whatever you believe about whatever. If that's interesting to you guys, great. I'm not really here to talk about that. But if you come from a generation that I came from and you looked at basketball a certain kind of way, and I think I talked about this after the Bucks got eliminated by the Heat, and it feels like I'm constantly talking about the way people talk about basketball and the moneyballization of the game that I love, and why that really got bad about 2 years ago, and I think we've been on the way back. We've been getting a little bit better every year. By the way, I should actually talk about some games, right? How many travels and carries did they call in that last Spurs game? Like, it's not like I was clapping like yay travels, but it really made an effect in the game. I don't think I don't think I've seen that many travels and carries called in any month of my life watching the Bucks. I have not. That's simply not something that's called. And obviously it matters. Do you want to hear my rant about interpretive officiating again? The only sensible way to officiate baseball, basketball, football, or anything that you love, if it's a sport that's kind of like tennis is binary, right? It's in or it's out.
Some of you seem to want to live in a world where the strike zone is in or out. I will defer to you, as I hope you occasionally defer to me. If baseball is your thing and you feel strongly about it, well, baseball is not as much my thing, so I'll shut up about that. But the only way to effectively officiate these things is, say, the officials run everything based on these standards. There's absolutely never made any sense to do a two-minute review or to litigiously go by the letter of the law and micromanage these guys making calls. Like, it just doesn't, it's not good for anything. And no one's happy. Like, you're not happy if the two-minute review reveals your team got screwed over, or I'm not, right? And so internet came, internet culture came, the tech bros came, the analytics people came, and only about half of it was good. But it just changed. And like I said, life is, you know, obviously life has changed. So I feel like I'm talking a lot about this. But the conversation that I'm more interested in having is how our interconnectivity with 8 billion other human beings has irrevocably affected humans. And so I'm going to play this clip. Don't perceive it so much as political, but it's just, it describes what I suspected. I'm not trying to paint people with that kind of broad brush. If you're offended by this, I'm sorry. I don't mean for it to be offensive, but this is what this isn't how I was raised, but I wonder if this is how other people perceive basketball, and which is why they're so at odds with the way the game was viewed in the 90s and aughts. So let me see if I can find that.
We don't know the extent of it, but I agree with you in spirit about this. And there is this weird, I mean, it has a political dimension to it, but there's almost this odd, what am I even looking for? It's an incongruity. It's a misalignment where the most vocal NBA fans are people who are often grew up the way I grew up, you know, upper middle class, go to college, and they've got a certain worldview, and they're surrounded by people like themselves.
Or they think they do.
And they're surrounded by people like themselves. And then they fall in love with the NBA. And it's a very parasocial, relationship, because you're seeing people and you like them and they're cool. And, you know, like, frankly, they're these cool black guys and you don't know them, but you like what they're doing on the TV. And so you just start projecting onto them. And then you kind of know
it's progressive to like the cool black guys.
And you know that because Adam Silver really leaned into that. The media kind of made him do it and he kind of walked into their trap. But that's a whole other conversation. But you also know reasonably that you pull the lever for the Democratic Party and they pull the lever for the Democratic Party. And if it's an issue, if it's a racial issue, whatever they're saying is probably going to be in alignment with your general view of things. Mm-hmm. And then they just assume, they just project everything, and they just assume these guys are exactly like me. They see the world exactly as I do. And then when Anthony Edwards sees some guys on the street who just happen to be gay, and he calls them queers and laments what the world came to, and not a single NBA player criticizes him, and one NBA player says that it was critical of the fact that he got fined and is just aghast that he got fined. It's and it's just, look, that's not condoning that behavior, obviously. No. That's not condoning it, but it's just a recognition that this is a different world. It is a harsh world. You lose your money if you don't start performing in front of millions of people watching you. And that's all that really matters. And that's just not the same world as the world of a lot of the people critiquing and analyzing it. And that gap, that chasm, is something that forever fascinates me and amuses me, because at a certain point, it's like, don't you get it? Don't you get what you're seeing? Like, don't you understand that this isn't Pricewaterhouse? That, I mean, again, it's not to condone the crazy excesses, and guys can go too far, but you're just never going to make this thing like your friends in your dorm. But it's just not going to be like that.
But I'm also I'm actually also, and this is a fairly new feeling that I've got. I'm also willing to take it a step further. I think the more that we would make the NBA as anodyne as typical corporate culture, the worse the NBA would be for it. I really truly feel that way. Like I really do think we would like the product less if we made it more corporate and sanitized.
100%. But people, the loudest people online from that demo, they cannot admit it. They can't admit, they cannot admit that the reason they love pro sports is for ferocious competitiveness at the highest level. That's the reason. Even Stephen Curry, for the smile and everything else that he has in front of him, is a ferocious competitor at the highest level and wants to rip his opponent's hearts out. And that's the reason we watch sports. And no one can admit it, but that's what it is. And, you know, basically what they are, they're game goofy. Like they're they're just goofy. They're acting like they don't understand the way it actually is, because for, you know, brownie points online, I don't know what, you know, everybody cheerleads each other and everything else. They have to act like it's one way when it's actually the other way. We know the way that it actually is. We know that players are not exactly the way as what you just said, upper middle class people that grew up a certain way and try to project or educated a certain way as well, and try to project that like morality and the way they view the world onto these guys. And it's like, they're complicated people.
To be fair, and you're making great points, it gets confounded by the players who aren't idiots really starting to sense that this is the message that gets them the most applause. And then, you know, you start seeing them try to perform it
but it's goofy.
So I hope that sort of answers some of the question. Look, I'm a big narrative guy myself. I like to root for the individuals and the personalities myself. At the bookstore the other day, picked up Halberstam, greatest sports writing of the 1900s or whatever it was, book for 50 cents at some bookstore. Like, I like all that. I like narratives. Clearly, I make videos. I make videos that are kind of NBA films, NFL film style for the NBA. Like, I like narratives. But if you're not 14... why don't you know any guys? It's always kind of my question. Like one of the podcasts you may have heard in the intro is like, Boogie Cousins hates Chris Paul and racism, and so I can get behind that. I'm like, is that a funny joke or do you believe that? Like, is that, like, I never know. And so on the onlineness of all of this, I never know if people are pandering. That's a better way of saying it. I never know if people are pandering or if they actually think this stuff. Because it's weird to me if you still are thinking about the world with the wide-eyed stare of an 8-year-old. And when you think about it, right? So rock stars and rap stars, movie stars, and sports stars, right? It's interesting. Hollywood does nothing but make movies about making movies, movies about old Hollywood, movies about plucky film. They make movies about people making movies all the time, right? And with very few exceptions, they depict everyone being terrible people, right? The casting couch and all of these type of things. That's what is depicted or hinted at. Jack Waltz, right? All of that stuff. Like, they tell you what it's about. Similarly, going back way before the days of VH1, Behind the Music, like, they sell that lifestyle for musicians, right? But and sometimes in Hollywood, and sometimes you get the crossover where it's Hollywood making a biopic or whatever, and still they show Ray Charles doing heroin, and they show Johnny Cash and all these people, and doesn't matter what, they do a fake one with a fake Beatles or a fake whatever they were supposed to be in that. It's it's universal, right? They tell you exactly what they think about it. They narrativize it, but they show all the parts, typically. And sports give us a bunch of kids' movies. Like, they're great, right? They're kids' movies and movies for big kids. They're basically Top Gun. Think about 9 out of 10 baseball movies you've ever seen. And the basketball ones have more edges to them, but it's still basically kind of feel-good stories for the most part, a little bit less. And football, even a little bit less, depending. Right, but even like the North Dallas 40 kind of football movies tend to have a good ending, but it's just, for whatever reason, like, and it makes sense, like, you have to indoctrinate the next generation of kids into sports in a way that you don't have to a music and movies. Most people just like music and movies. But I also think, as it relates to Kyrie or anything else, I think if you kind of don't have forgiveness in your heart, or if you're so silly that you don't see, you don't know any guys like this, or you just don't have any sort of vision with this, then I think people are overly punitive in their messaging and the things that they say about a dude like Kyrie, because it's like, we got to scapegoat this guy right out of here so that we can go back to loving all the players and thinking they're just be my best buddy and we'd play Xbox. And I bet you Giannis would take me out for smoothies if he saw me. And by the way, like, so the reason adults start to feel this way is because adults live through Brett Favre and OJ and name any other person, obviously varying degrees, but you've lived through all this stuff already. So if you've lived through all this stuff already, if the story comes out with TMZ Sports that Giannis, Mariah, ... some sort of dispute, the evidence is unclear, well, now you're going to compromise morally because you were worshiping this dude. Just don't worship this dude. By the way, what happened to the Bledsoe story, right? The other thing is, quite clearly, we don't know what's going on with all these stories, right? Kind of think we know what's up with that Primo story, right? But he happened to hit in a busy sports week for controversy. There wasn't like enough oxygen for that controversy, right? So one of two things, actually one of three things happened with that Bledsoe story. But we don't know. And ultimately, we don't know how to talk about this stuff. We also, frankly, don't know how to talk about people who had one heinous, despicable, I hate even thinking about it, I hate even talking about its story, and it was one 15 years ago. How do you talk about Jason Kidd? How do you talk about Derrick Rose? How do you talk about these things where it was the one time? Also, recognition that just because something makes the news, that could be one time, that could be the one time caught out of 10, right? So if you're an adult, it's just better to take care of yourself and the people under your roof and enjoy these guys and these competitions for your entertainment and for your rooting interest. And that's how I look at it. And if people feel differently, great. But it ties into the Twitter conversation, because the Twitter conversation basically is me positing that people have good intentions, but everybody's kind of fronting. So I hope that answers some of that. So it's 11:06. I really appreciate all the questions I get. Thank you very much for caring enough to send questions. I'm going to read them all now and try to summarize. But if I ask for questions and you cared enough to respond, please don't take any shade. We'll address some of this in later episodes. And thank you for your support. But I'm tired. Perfect example. Carson Caulfield asked my thoughts on 894. I don't know what that means. Does it mean that I don't live there anymore? Does that mean that they're... So what is 894? 794 goes into downtown, past the Third Ward. So is 894 the old zoo interchange? I'm not sure. Are they getting another lane? I think I've... No thoughts. I'm assuming it's terrible. Clearly, I do have a take on this. Man, Arizona got their construction done so quick. And I think South Carolina is somewhere in the middle. And obviously living in the ice state of Wisconsin, nothing ever gets done. So my thoughts are, if they're doing something to 894, I hope it works out for you people who have to drive it. You know, my thoughts. Thoughts up on that one. Bill Canzoneri. Kind of my nemesis. He says, your thoughts on Andor better be good when the rest of your thoughts are not. Man, all the rest of my thoughts are trash. But yeah, I think we've talked about Andor quite a bit. Thanks for stopping by. Limps asks, okay, I got one. You can trade Middleton for a dream package, but a realistic one too. What's your move? Once. And there was one more here. Oh, my guy. Derek Ledoux, sometimes podcaster. Is Rodgers bad, or all the quarterbacks bad, or a little of everything? I despise myself for answering this question in this way, but I'm going to be honest. It does look like, I mean, it looks like the thumb's bothering him. Just being completely honest. Completely honest. The ball's coming out of his hand weird. And we saw this. Favre was a lot more banged up because he played through stuff and just kind of, that's just the way it kind of shook out. I do remember Brett hitting somebody's helmet on a throw and it kind of wrecking. Don't know if that was the Railroad season. One of them seasons. It all runs together. He looks a little bit hurt. The Packers are 4-6. I would not be surprised if they squeak into the playoffs, but I just think statistically it's really hard to lose six games in a row, and so the Packers were due. But no, Rodgers isn't bad. But look, so I need to, I'm back up, and I hope I'll answer all these questions in one final flurry, and then we can get out of here because this is plus an hour. I've been trying to keep these under an hour for you guys. What a great, so I should have led the podcast with this. This is the greatest narrative week I have ever experienced as someone who enjoys the Middleton debate and someone who is a Rodgers hater and as someone who has said since 2015 that this guy Dustin Gotsy is a moron who doesn't appreciate the Bucks branding and its colors. Like, tic-tac-toe this week, or bingo, or Yahtzee, or whatever, man. All these horses came in this week. The Bucks, were they 9-0 before they lost, and then they lost legitimately? And my conspiracy theory on that is almost, I don't really, really believe this, but like, if the Bucks are 6-0, 7-0, 8-0, 9-0 without Chris Middleton, it's almost like you got to sit everybody else so it doesn't look so bad, right? And it's not rocket science, guys. And again, shout out to Camille. I thought, again, anybody who listens to this and thinks I'm making fun of Camille, you know, Camille's been on twice. I love Camille. Camille's the best. And an outstanding. Those guys forget more about sports than I would ever remember. People just don't see the Middleton thing clearly. And if you watch basketball a long time, you would sort guys and put guys in certain kind of buckets, and they laugh at me for calling him a broke Joe Johnson. Look at Joe Johnson's numbers. Look at Joe Johnson's number of clutch shots. I mean, that was just kind of a one-off thing that I said. I think I responded to that. I think I was listening to that show, and I was shooting baskets outside and listening to the live stream on YouTube, and sometimes I'll respond or whatever. But but the last time the Bucks had this good of a start, remember this, just narrative-wise, right? Because, again, I don't lie to you with narratives like other people do. I don't, like, put up some graphic about Chris hitting 14 shots in the last 2 minutes and put it next to LeBron and think that's a real stat. Like, I don't do that stuff. But we're just having fun. We're just having fun with stats. And it's worth mentioning that the last time the Bucks had this good of a start, Chris Middleton did not fit in. Everybody remembers there were many, many articles about this. Chris did not fit in with Budenholzer. Everybody else was getting off. He was playing poorly. It wasn't like he was awful, lazy Chris. He couldn't get in. And that always stuck. I was clearly hating on him by then. But fit is a thing, right? I think if people are just watching Giannis stats, and it's like, how can you complain about anything when Giannis just had 36 and 19 and we destroyed the Kings? And it's like, because I can, because we're watching this thing forward. And Middleton didn't fit. Middleton needs, like, every cling cleared out for him to do his thing. And what I said then, although I, yes, clearly I was trying to trade him, But it was like, wouldn't it be great if this dude fit? Wouldn't it be great if this guy came in as a sniper? Wouldn't it be great if he was a six man? Wouldn't it be great if we could make this whole thing work? Because again, I'll remind you, Eric Bledsoe, better than him for half a year. Malcolm Brogdon, better than him in the Raptor series, better than him quite a good amount of the time. And Drew Holiday, better than him since he's been here, although certainly not in that playoff run. So people of that level could be better than him for like 2 months, which is fine. But what is interesting now, he's not there. Brooke looks awesome. Everybody else, the ball moves. And Javon Carter, look, this whole episode should be about Javon Carter and how much fun these games are and how hard everyone's competing. And by the way, it's a little bit of shade on Pat too, right? We can agree? Like everybody talked about, I think Pat, when Shafty was here and I didn't want to correct him, he said, would you agree that our three best shooters were out? And I think we were we talking about Grayson and Pat and Chris, or am I forgetting somebody? Or maybe Jingles. I mean, I think he was saying Joe Ingles too. But Chris, bad defender. Pat, sometimes improving, but sketchy. Jump around, get out your seats and jump around. Pat Connaughton, right? So this scrappy team, with Portis really, I think, playing poorly, we traded defense for offense, and that's what it looks like. But because I'm not here to lie to you guys, I'm not going to say that sometimes when we get the all offense that that's not a little bit better, but it's just fun to talk about. It's fun to think about, right? And the price of the brick on Middleton just at this point has to go down. Like, I don't know how you could possibly justify maxing out this old player, this bad defender, when we've seen what it looked like. And all I ever wanted to do was see what it looked like with other versions of this, right? Drew Holiday, 50% titles with Giannis, right? Chris Middleton, 10% or whatever it is. Maybe it's 1 out of 9 or whatever. But that's simply what it is. And so what a fun week for me with the Packers in shambles. Rodgers, like, I know the Packers came back and won. Rodgers really, really doesn't care what it looks like. Like that fourth down play where, like, it, you can look, you can put a lot of narratives in front of me. You cannot, you will not be able to convince me in 2022 that Aaron Rodgers was like, why didn't we run or fourth down? Oh, why'd you make me pass? That I'm supposed to believe that one? And then because it's late, and we could talk about Twitter some other time. I'll probably have a good 10 minutes on that. Matter of fact, let's give you some homework and we get out of here. If you have access to whatever streaming service community is on, watch as your homework the Meow Meow Beans episode of Community. There will be a test later. Finally, are we just going to wear the black jerseys every single game now? I feel like maybe I missed 2 games of the purple. I think we've only worn the purple once. And I think NBA game tracker, uniform tracker, whatever it is, .com or whatever the website is, has us wearing the purple less than the ridiculous blue alt and the black, which is par for the course for these New York idiots. I did not watch the video that came with it. Apparently it's referencing some mural. I haven't lived in Milwaukee in 17 years. It's not the most prominent mural. What's the most prominent mural? Just off of the expressway, I mean, there's a Hernandez one coming in north. I don't think the Whale Wall's there anymore. And it used to be kind of the Line and Kugel one. But among murals, the great big bald eagle head, did you come in? The Hernandez mural. It's the biggest one, right? But we just wanted to make some crazy, you know. So, again, maybe people feel strongly about this. I do not know. I don't care what signifiers your city has. You should not be looking around at your city, getting inspiration, and then making over generational franchise branding based on something you happen to see. It's not something I can get down with. Beauchamp. Man, that is fun. So it'll tell me the kind of fan that you are, and you don't have to be the kind of fan that I am, but there's almost nothing better than watching a crazy bananas game with Brook Lopez, Javon Carter, and the early Beauchamp game with against the Wolves, I want to say, into the game where I want to say he was 4-6 from 3 at some stretch or something like that. three of five, something like that. I think it was four of something, all in that stretch. There's nothing like a rookie. There's nothing like a rookie playing well. You can just imagine anything. You can imagine anything with a rookie, which is why it was kind of weird to me that people were kind of willing to discard Brogdon. There's nothing like a rookie playing well. I think we've seen that his shot has this kind of on-again, off-again quality to it. It's either like either he finds the range or it seems like it hits the heel a lot. But again, the most gratifying regular season since the first Budenholzer year, without a doubt. The games are fun. The team is playing hard. Even when they run out of steam, they run out of offense, but people are getting like offensive rebounds, right? People are scrambling for the ball. People are doing their best. There's lots of passes. A lot of those passes in now with a pass to Ibaka for a dunk, right? Or we get it to Brook late in the clock and he gets like a shot that he's going to make 60% of the time. It's just basketball that I'm a little bit more comfortable with, and it's been great. So three great narratives came like right together this last week, and it's been a lot of fun, and I hope that answers all their questions. And Olympus, I don't want him traded for anything. I don't want him to be treated like someone with any greater stature than Drew, because I think it's pretty clear that his game is going to continue to deteriorate. I want him to be the specialist. I've always wanted him to be the closer, the specialist. When you look at his final stats, because a couple of weeks ago somebody sent his final stats at me, like Middleton took more shots in the finals and played more minutes than Giannis. And like kudos, right? But that's not really what we want him to be. We want him to be fresh and firing. We want him to be Ricky Pierce or somebody. We don't want him to be this indispensable guy, because he doesn't provide defense or rebounding and only occasionally passing. So wouldn't it be dope if he just shot? I've said that every podcast. So probably a good place to stop. Maybe I'll end with it. You know, we got other stuff. I have other audio clips. We have Giannis on the Ibaka podcast or Ibaka cooking show, whatever. There's plenty of other stuff, but I think this is probably a good place to stop. Zip it up, zip it out.
More as than I recall, I know you love to show off, but I never thought that you would take it this far. What do I know?
Flash. Bo Jam buries the three.
What do I know?
Flash.
Don't I know?
Rebound number 14 for Giannis. Will he get the assist here? He will. There is triple double number 30. Bo Jam.
Some time down the stretch here for Milwaukee. Devon Carter leans in.
Get in there, boy.
It's been that kind of night.